Chapter 3.
What was that thing?
Trina asked as she and her sisters cautiously approached the dead body of Maltram.
I'm not 100% sure, I admitted. But I know those guys we were fighting were deathly afraid of disturbing her. And one guy said we woke her up from a slumber that has allegedly lasted for hundreds of years.
No wonder she was so angry,
Polina whistled.
I get mad just being woken up from a quick nap. Just imagine how I'd be if I got woken up a few hundred years too early. Worse than that thing,
Trina giggled.
I'm sure.
I suppose we can always ask them, Zarek said, as he pointed back at the two petrified bodies behind us. After they wake up from their little nap, of course.
I'll keep them petrified until we get back to Hatra, I explained. Then we can toss them in the airship and get the information we need out of them.
Did we ever even establish they were Green Glass Sect?
Marina questioned. Not officially, I said. Though right before they tried to trap me underwater, they mentioned something about doing something Olivier couldn't, which indicates they at least know who Olivier was and knew we had a history.
Then what were they doing all the way out here? Xoclan pondered aloud. Odrain is quite some ways away from Rama.
That's what I intend to find out, I growled.
Let's load these fuckers onto Zarek's back and start the journey back to Hatra.
Too bad Empress Aliona didn't come along,
Marina sighed.
She could just portal us back. Emperor Evan didn't want to put her in harm's way,
Polina reminded her sister.
And that was probably a good idea, since we all just about got skewered and then eaten by a bloodthirsty monster. I know.
Marina chuckled.
It's just my laziness kicking in.
Couldn't we just send the Empress a message and ask her to portal us back?
Trina suggested.
No, I said. I need to fly, get some of this energy out. Besides, I don't want to wait a moment longer than I have to in this frozen wasteland.
No one argued with that. The Dryad sisters used the vines on their clothes to pick up the two petrified sect members and gently set them on Xoclan's back. They then lifted themselves up onto my father and used their vines to both pin our captives to the ground and hold themselves onto the black dragon as he took to the sky. Zarek and I were right behind Xoclan, and we began the journey back through the snowy tundra. As we raised up into the clouds, I looked down and cringed at just how macabre the scene below us really was. There were bodies scattered all over the place, with blood and guts splattered around the ice that turned it a deep crimson. I didn't know if there were the equivalent of vultures in Odrain, but if there were, they would certainly have a feast for the ages. Even with our enhanced speed and stamina, it took the other two dragons and I hours to get back to Hatra. The new capital of Rama was bustling with people as we flew over, and most of them stopped and gawked as they watched their emperor and his crew return. As we passed over the outskirts of the city, Trina reached up and pressed the Blue Tree Guild gorget around her neck and sent a silent message to Lyca that we were on our way to the airship. Sure enough, when we finally landed in front of the massive airship that acted as the Blue Tree Guild's prison, Lyca and her grandfather Pyotr were already waiting for us. Lyca wore her signature half-smirk on her face as she watched the dryads dismount, and her wolf ears twitched happily as she placed her hands on her hips and popped them to the left. The wolf demi-human's gray eyes were full of wonder as Zarek, Xoclan, and I transformed back into our human forms, and her fluffy gray tail flitted back and forth happily when I grabbed the two prisoners and lifted them up off their feet. I had repeatedly re-petrified our captives as we made our way back to the capital city, but I'd intentionally let the effect wear off over the last hour or so. The prisoners were starting to get groggy, though neither of them was really moving yet.
What do we have here, Emperor Evan?
Lyca asked as she bared her canines.
More prisoners for our ship?
Green Glass Sect, I explained. At least I'm pretty sure they are.
I thought we killed them all.
The silver-haired wolf demi-human growled.
And their leader?
I thought we did too, I said.
That's why we left these two alive. They might just be key in helping us figure out what's on the other side of the breach.
If they'll talk,
Pyotr, the elder wolf demihuman, sighed.
These green glass sect fools will take their own lives before they betray their own.
Evan can get them to talk, Grandfather.
Lyca promised.
I've seen him do it many, many times before.
Let's get them inside, I said to my uncle and father. I have a feeling both of these sleeping beauties here are going to wake up soon, and I want to be there when they do. The dryads used their vines to carry the captives up the ramp of the airship, while Lyca and Pyotr led the way toward the cell block. I could sense Zarek's nerves as we entered the prison, though I had no intention of throwing him back in a cell anytime soon, now that he was fully on our side. We greeted a couple of BTG guards before we headed down to a spot where there were two cells empty, right next to each other. Then Pyotr used the keys on his belt to open them both up, and we tossed the prisoners onto the stone floor with a hard crash.
Whew, that sounded painful.
Categorization: humans, 2. Status: mild concussion. Priority: low. They're fine, I chuckled, as I watched the old wolf lock the two bastards up. But let me speed up the process. I opened my mouth and let a wave of glitter wash over the prisoners. The 8 of us stood there and watched as the Green Glass Sect members started to stir, and then they slowly regained consciousness. The smart one seemed to wake up first, and he pulled himself to his feet as he looked around and surveyed his new surroundings. He was a shorter, muscular man, though the pale flesh on his face was gaunt against his bones. The prisoner's face was rounded and filled with black stubble, which perfectly matched the wild, shoulder-length black hair on his head. His blue eyes were beady and pale as he stared back at me, and his thin lips twisted into a scowl.
Where the fuck am I? He demanded. Where have you taken me?
Welcome to Hatra, I said as I crossed my arms over my chest. The new capital city of the Avanian Empire.
Ooh, I like that name.
Trina giggled.
Very sexy and powerful.
You brought me back to this filthy city? The man asked.
And then he literally spat on the floor.
I wish you had just have killed me like you did my brothers.
So you are Green Glass Sect then, right? I narrowed my eyes as I questioned the bastard.
Tell him nothing,
the other prisoner protested groggily as he stood to his feet. The second man was tall and slender, with unkempt blonde hair and a clean-shaven face that was so rigid I wondered if you could use it to cut tomatoes. His brown eyes were sunken in, with bags underneath them so large they'd make a raccoon jealous. And both the prisoners wore the same green robe, which further indicated they were part of the sect. Oh, you're going to tell me everything, I smirked. The only question is whether you're going to do it the easy way or the hard way.
So I have to ask, Xoclan growled. What were a bunch of Green Glass Sect members doing out in the middle of Odraine and hidden away?
The blonde man simply chuckled as he shook his head back and forth.
You're not getting another word out of me, Dragon Slime, he said. You'll have to kill me first.
We were in hiding, the dark-haired man sighed.
What are you doing?
The blonde sect member gasped as he whirled on his comrade.
Do not betray your sect like...
The sect is gone, Tramshul,
the man on the left said as he hung his head.
Asher is dead. Olivier is dead. Literally, the rest of our membership is dead. We're probably the only 2 left now.
And I intend to join our brothers in their glorious death,
Tramshul scoffed.
Like a good sect member should.
Okay, I shrugged. If you don't want to talk, we can always just kill you now and talk to this guy here. What was your name again?
Bertram, the dark-haired man said. Of the Green Glass Sect.
How the hell did you survive this long?
Lyca growled.
We killed your leaders ages ago.
The entire sect wasn't with Olivier when you attacked, Bertram explained. It was decided from the beginning that there would always be a small band of brothers who remained separate from the rest,
for this exact reason, to ensure our survival. How's that working out for you?
Zarek chuckled sarcastically.
It was working fine until you all showed up,
Tramshul grumbled.
That's on you, pal,
Trina said with a click of her tongue.
We were just flying along until you attacked us. Yeah,
Polina added.
If you hadn't tried to skewer us with those icicles, we wouldn't have even known you were there, and we would have left you alone.
It's in our blood,
Tramshul smirked.
We see a dragon and we purge the world of its existence. Little did we know, we actually had shot at the Dragon Lord himself.
Dragon Emperor, I corrected.
We would have succeeded, too, if it wasn't for Maltram, Bertram sighed. Again, I growled. You have nobody to blame but yourself for that one. You're the idiots who disturbed her slumber, and you paid for it dearly.
And I'd do it all over again if it meant I got a chance to rid the world of a filthy dragon,
Tramshul sneered.
You'll get nothing from me, Dragon Emperor.
Then I'll just talk to him. I shrugged and pointed at Bertram.
Ask away, the dark-haired man said with slumped shoulders. Everything we've worked for in the last few centuries is gone now anyway. I've got nothing left to fight for.
Man, if this guy wasn't part of a dragon-murdering group of fanatics, I may have felt a bit sorry for him. The dude was totally defeated down to his very core. And I had no doubt in my mind that he just wanted to tell me whatever he was going to tell me and then die. We want to know about Olivier's connection to the Demon King, I asked. Specifically, the breach.
You think he told me that? Bertram scoffed. That sort of information was only given to the higher-ups in the sect, and I was only an average member.
Tramshul, on the other hand.
Do not say another word!
Tramshul hissed. Wait, I said, as a smile spread across my face. So that's why you wanted to kill yourself. You're a high-ranking member, and you knew I'd interrogate you. Tramshul's eyes narrowed, but he simply shook his head and took a step back from the bars. It looked like this motherfucker had chosen the hard way after all. Without another word, I conjured up my nature magic, and several bluish-green tendrils of energy started to spread from my fingertips and then crept their way toward the man in the cell. Tramshul's eyes went wide as he began to walk backwards, and he started to look around in a panic as a few blue-colored sparks shot out of his hand.
They've enchanted the prison cells to prevent our magic, Bertram sighed. Then why can this asshole use it?
Tramshul snapped as he glared at me and pressed himself into the bars of his cell.
Because I'm standing outside the cell, dumbass, I smirked.
Do yourself a favor and just talk, Tramshul,
Bertram groaned.
Never!
The Blood Sect member spat.
You'll have to pry whatever out of my cold, dead...
Before he could finish the thought, the tendrils of energy wrapped around his body and then began to force themselves into his eyes, nose, and mouth. Tramshul's scream came out as a garbled mess as blood began to trickle out of every orifice on his face, and he struggled to escape my spell, but it was no use.
Let's try that again,
I said through gritted teeth as I pulled the man closer to the bars.
What do you know about the Demon King and the Breach?
Tramshul tried to resist, though all that did was cause even more blood to ooze out of his mouth as he growled in agony. Finally, the man's body seemed to loosen up, and he took a deep breath.
The breach can only be sealed from the inside,
he gurgled.
We know that, I sighed.
How and where?
From the spot where it was first opened,
Tramshul explained.
Where the Demon King first stood at the dawn of time, when he vowed revenge on the gods who banished him.
And where would that be?
Nobody knows the exact location. It's somewhere in the Valley of Sorrows. That's all I know about the breach, I swear. Please make it stop!
What about the Demon King?
Lyca stepped forward.
What do you know about him?
I know you're a fool if you think you can actually defeat him,
Tramshul chuckled, and his teeth were stained with blood as he smiled at me.
Even with all your power, Dragon Emperor, you're no match for my master.
I doubt that.
Trina laughed.
Emperor Evan has bonded with all of the noble swords and is now the most powerful being in all of this world.
The most powerful ant in the hill is still weaker than a spider who preys on it,
Tramshul laughed. We've read all the texts and interrogated our fair share of assholes like you, I mused. I know I have the power to close the breach now.
Close a breach, yes, Tramshul
continued.
Kill my master? Oh, no. Only the gods themselves have such power. I wish I were around to see the forthcoming events unfold. You will make your foolish mission into the breach, and maybe, maybe you will close it. But as long as my master still lives, all that will do is start the entire process all over again. The breach will return, and my master will emerge into this world stronger than ever.
This was really, really troubling news. But I didn't dare lose my composure in front of my enemies. Instead, I sent more tendrils into Tramshul's mouth, which caused him to gasp and gurgle as he writhed around in pain.
Don't fuck with me, I warned.
I'm not, he gasped. I couldn't lie to you if I wanted to.
How can the gods kill him? I asked.
Because they're gods,
the man retorted half sarcastically.
I'm going to need more than that, I muttered. And then I intensified my spell and sent even more blood pouring out of the man's mouth. Do you know how the gods can kill the Demon King?
They're pure beings with purified magic,
Tramshul sputtered.
Not corruptible by the sins of man or the primal filth of beasts. Only a pure being can kill our master. And you're far from pure, Dragon Slime.
That's more like it. I smirked as I released the spell, and Tramshul collapsed into a heap on the floor. The blonde man spat out a mouthful of blood as he laid there on the stone floor, heaving and trembling.
It sounds like you may have a problem, Dragon, Bertram said, and for the first time during this conversation, it seemed like he perked up a bit. Even now, after all you've been through, you can't defeat our master.
Sure I can, I growled. I just haven't found out how to do it yet. Then I turned away and began to walk down the hall, and my friends followed me closely.
Where are you going, Evan? Xoclan asked.
What about these two prisoners?
Lyca added.
I'm going to talk to Aliona, I said. She might know what to do. As for those two chuckleheads, I don't really give a shit. Either kill them or let them rot in those cells for the rest of their lives for all I care.
I wasn't sure if it was purely because of the bad news, or because I was just pissed off at the sudden arrogance of the two sect members, but I was on the warpath. Apparently, closing the breach wasn't enough. If I actually wanted to declare victory, I had to kill the Demon King too. And to do that, I needed to become a lot more powerful than I already was. I marched down the hallways of the airship, out into the courtyard, and then summoned three silver messenger dragons into my hand. Go to Aliona, Julia, and Ruslan, I said to the miniature glowing creature. Meet me in the throne room as soon as possible. We've just run into a major roadblock. The little dragons squeaked as they jumped down off of my palm, and then they dashed off in different directions. Meanwhile, I transformed into a dragon and took to the sky. I landed in front of the brilliant lunar palace in a matter of minutes, turned back into a human, and then rushed through the doors. I moved through the palace like a man on a mission, which meant I rushed straight past several of my loyal subjects as they waved hello and greeted me happily as they passed. Eventually, I came to the room that was dubbed my throne room, which Raissa and Azra had immediately started working on the day they found out I was going to be crowned king. Once they found out I was actually going to be an emperor, the two head architects decided it needed to be made even more spectacular than originally planned. The room was a work in progress, though it was already showing the same incredible designs and attention to detail I was used to seeing from Azra and Raissa. At the far end of the room were two chairs made out of pure moonstone, which were intended to be the thrones for Aliona and I. Currently, they were little more than square-shaped blocks with small carved-out seats on the front. But I knew eventually they would become beautiful thrones full of intricate carvings and gemstones. The ceiling of this room was painted with some sort of shiny black paint that glistened against the light of the torches that lined the walls, and several chandeliers made of pure silver hung in a line down the center. The floor was made of a dark black stone that was somehow reflective, which allowed me to watch myself pass over it as I walked toward the edge of the room.
"It's beautiful, isn't it, son?" Ruslan's voice asked.
And I turned around to see my adopted father and mother in the doorway.
"Only the best for this world's first emperor."
"The first?"
Julia mused as she clapped her hand fan closed and smiled.
"And surely the best."
"No pressure or anything," I chuckled.
"Azra and Raisa have outdone themselves,"
Julia admitted as she looked around the room.
"I thought the Lunar Palace itself was the pinnacle of their art, but this is something else."
"It is a throne room fit for an emperor and his empress,"
Ruslan smirked.
"I can already feel the power this sort of room exudes. Imagine it, Julia. Evan's many subordinates walking in here and see him and his beautiful wife up on their thrones, surrounded by rare gems that are only found around Hotra."
"Maybe with a crown on their heads as well,"
Julia interjected.
"I'm sure our royal jeweler is already on it. Just think of it, my love. I would be intimidated walking into that sort of a picture, and I know Evan has a favorable disposition toward us."
"Favorable disposition?" I laughed.
"You two are my adopted parents."
"Exactly,"
the fox demihuman said, and his orange ears wiggled happily.
"Just imagine how a complete stranger would feel. They'd get quite the first impression, that's for sure."
"Let's hope so," I sighed. "Though I'm also hoping that once the miasma is purged from this land and the breach is closed, we won't have to worry too much about rebellion or hostile parties."
"Oh, wow."
Aliona's beautiful voice trailed off from the doorway.
"I haven't been in this room since it was a large stone box. It looks fantastic."
"We were just talking about how beautiful you would look on this throne," I said as I gave my wife a slight bow. "Next to the most powerful man in this entire world."
"Evan,"
the white-haired beauty giggled.
"I know you didn't call me here just to flatter me."
"I'm afraid not," I sighed. "We've hit a bit of a snag."
"How so?"
Aliona asked.
"Did things not go well in Odraine?"
"They went fine. We killed the last remnants of the Green Glass Sect and pulled information out of the only two survivors. It's what they told me that's troubling."
"What did they say to you, son?"
Ruslan's tone suddenly changed to that of a concerned father. "They told me I wasn't strong enough to kill the Demon King," I explained.
"You don't need to kill him, though,"
Aliona reminded me.
"You just need to close the breach, and you're already strong enough to do that."
"That's what I thought, too," I shook my head. "The bastard I interrogated, though, told me it wouldn't be enough. If I just closed up the breach, the Demon King would just bide his time until he was strong enough again to reopen it. The only way we can stop this forever is by rooting out the source of the problem itself, and the Demon King can apparently only be slain by a pure being like the gods."
"That is quite the barrier,"
Ruslan admitted as he stroked his chin, and his reddish-orange ears twitched curiously.
"Would Aeron assist, possibly?"
"Maybe," I grumbled. "Though I'd imagine if the gods could have gone into the breach and killed the Demon King, they would have done it by now."
"What about Rodion?"
Julia suggested.
"Or Aliona? They're both members of the White Jade Sect, and two of the most powerful ones at that."
"I won't put Aliona in harm's way," I said firmly. "She's not going anywhere near the breach. As for Rodion, he needs to stay on this side of the portal to keep the breach from widening even further. The last thing we need is for all hell to break loose in Rama while we're in the breach trying to close it."
"Then what do you suggest, son?"
Ruslan frowned.
"I don't know," I groaned and ran a hand through my hair. "That's why I called all of you here. I need advice, and you three have been the best support system a dragon could ask for. Suddenly, there was a flash of light, and a glowing figure appeared in the room beside us. As the glow faded, we were all greeted with the sight of a woman with alabaster skin and long, flowing white hair. A thin, see-through white wrap covered her large breasts and delicate flower, and her lips were twisted into a smile as she looked between my friends and me. It was Mariah in her physical form.
"I'm sorry to interrupt,"
the spirit of the Sword of Healing said.
"But I hear you have a problem about your spirit not being pure enough."
"That seems to be the case," I sighed. "Please tell me you have an idea to fix it."
"I have a couple,"
Mariah shrugged.
"Mostly involving the absolute purification of your spirit."
"Didn't we already do that?" I asked. "Isn't that why I'm able to form soul bridges with all of my lovers and bonds with the other nobles?"
"We purified the spiritual sea, yes,"
she explained.
"Not your spirit itself. That is why the sky of your spiritual sea is black. There is still a small hint of darkness in you, Evan."
"In any other situation, that would sound badass," I chuckled. "Right now, though, it's the last thing I want to hear."
"Do you really think Evan's spirit could be purified?"
Aliona questioned.
"I thought purifying mortal spirits was forbidden."
"It is,"
Mariah confirmed.
"But has that ever stopped you before?"
I snickered at the spirit's snarky comment, even though it was 100% true. I was never one for following the rules, especially when it came to things standing in the way for me protecting my people. If it was forbidden for me to purify my spirit completely, then I just needed to find any loophole that might exist. But first, I needed to figure out what those loopholes were. "Just out of curiosity," I said, "who forbids this? The gods?"
"The Iudices,"
Mariah noted.
"The path to a pure spirit goes through them."
"Oh, lovely. They always seem like such pleasant people to work with."
"Evan, you surely can't be serious about doing this. You would be breaking all sorts of sacred rules, and angering the Iudices is not the wisest thing to do when you're about to go on such an important journey."
"A journey where your spiritual sea and the power that lies within it will be of the utmost importance," Ruslan added.
"Look," I shook my head. "I don't want to deal with those creepy, wrinkly fuckers any more than you do. But I don't think that we have much of a choice. I have to at least get them in front of me and see if I can plead my case, or maybe I'll just put them out of their misery once and for all."
"That's probably not a good idea. That would completely throw off the balance of the magic in this universe."
"Okay, okay," I conceded. "I won't kill them, but I need to talk to them immediately. How do I do that?"
"I must call on them,"
the spirit said.
"Well, inside your spiritual sea, of course."
"In that case, we should go to the River Moonstone House," Ruslan suggested. "It'll amplify Evan's powers and put him in the right state of mind for meditation."
I couldn't argue with that. The River Moonstone House was one of the most spiritual and mystical places in all of Hatra, a place where pure magic seemed to radiate off the walls and through the serene underground river that flowed through the cavern itself. "To the River Moonstone House, then," I announced. The five of us headed out of the throne room and then out to the courtyard of the Lunar Palace. We meandered around the perimeter of the palace until we got to the gardens, where an inconspicuous entrance for the sacred space awaited. I led my friends into the underground chamber and instantly felt a wave of serenity wash over my very soul. There really was something magical about this place. I just hoped it was enough to convince the Iudices I was worthy of being purified.
"Shall we meditate with you, son?" Ruslan asked.
"No,"
Aliona answered for me.
"We must allow Evan to do this on his own. Mariah will be there to help and guide him, but the three of us will simply remain here and keep watch."
"Keep watch?"
Julia questioned.
"For what?"
"Anything,"
my wife explained.
"We should keep out any distractions, be it friend or foe, or even a rogue rabbit that decides to come down those steps. Evan needs full concentration right now."
Julia and Ruslan gave Aliona a nod, and then they moved into position. Meanwhile, I simply sat down, crossed my legs over themselves, and took a deep breath. Then I closed my eyes and tried to focus on nothing but the calming sensations around me. The sound of the trickling water through the cave was pure bliss, and it cut through the deafening silence and echoed off the brightly colored walls. I tried to find my inner peace as I sat in this most magical of places, and soon I felt myself drifting off into another state of being. When I finally opened my eyes, I found myself standing before a large body of water, on a sandy white beach with a dark sky overhead. My spiritual sea. Mariah was there as well, and she had a nervous expression on her face as she twiddled her hands together and looked around. "It'll be all right," I promised as I took her hand. "I know the Iudices are scary as fuck, but I won't let them hurt you. If they try, I'll just have to kick their asses again."
"It's not me I'm worried about,"
Mariah admitted ominously. Suddenly, I saw three robed figures floating toward us from the horizon of my spiritual sea. Even though they were completely cloaked and floated with their heads down, I knew exactly what they were. It was the Iudices, come to pass judgment.